two-pitch swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, May 6, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And Chet, we've got a big show lined up again. We're coming off our great one-year anniversary show last week on Draft Eve with special guest Mark Eckel, which set another new Philly Press Box Radio listener record. And we get to follow that up with Mark's partner in crime, the very busy Elliott Shore Parks, will be joining us for a post-draft look at the Eagles.
Yeah, Bill, Mark and Elliott do a great job covering the birds for NJ.com. Mark, in fact, was right on the money in predicting that Nelson Aguilar would be the pick if the Eagles stayed at number 20, as they did, of course. And I know Elliott has plenty of thoughts about the entire draft, so we're happy to pick his brain once again.
Absolutely. Well, while we're waiting on Elliott to get here, let's go ahead and get our Eagles trivia question out there. We may take our callers, our answers a little bit later on once we get through with Elliott, because he is on a very busy schedule here. So we're not going to have him for a real long time. So let's get this trivia out while we're waiting on him, and we'll get started. Okay? This is to win the 8x10 autographed Eagles photo of former quarterback Roman Gabriel, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And this will go to the first caller that can call in and correctly answer the question. Here we go. Since we're talking draft, we're going to stay with the draft. In the 2007 NFL draft, the Eagles made 8 picks. Only one of them is still in the NFL, and he's still with the Birds. Can you name him? And we'll come back and get that answer in a little while, Chet, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and talk about the draft. And, you know, you mentioned Nelson Aguilar as the first pick. What was your thoughts on that? And as you know, I was a Brashan Perryman guy, and Perryman was on the board at the time, but the Eagles chose Aguilar in his place.
Well, they weren't going to get Amari Cooper or, you know, the other real top-of-the-line wide receivers, but by all indications, this guy's pretty good. He's got decent speed. He's got decent size. You know, nothing sensational in either case. But apparently, you know, he plays hard, and he can catch the ball, and he can run after the catch a little bit. And clearly the Eagles had a need at wide receiver. So I'm fine with it. I mean, Mark Eckel likes to pick. Ray Dinger gave his okay on it as well. So I think they got a good one here. And, I mean, they compare him to Jeremy Maclin. And apparently he's going to step right in and be, you know, either the number one or number two guy, maybe after Matthews, right away in his rookie season. So I like what he brings to the table, and I like his attitude, having seen him talk on a few occasions already. So I'm very happy with that pick.
Yeah, I'm okay with the pick, too. As I said, I like Perryman. I think Perryman's got he reminds me, because of his size and terrific speed, that he may be, in my mind, a T.O., an Anquan Boldin kind of guy, like a real big physical receiver who can also run, fits perfect into that Baltimore Ravens system. And, you know, it's a great pick for them, I think. But as far as the Eagles pick, I'm okay with that. I certainly, they filled a need at wide receiver, and the guy can also return some kicks, punts. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. I would have I'd like to go on the other way, but I'm good with this pick. I think they definitely filled a need. How about the second pick? How did you like that, filling the need of a defensive back?
Well, that's clearly another big issue for the Birds. They were really bad in the secondary last year. They went out and got Byron Maxwell, Walter Thurman, So they got some guys, but they still needed more help in the draft, and they got a guy who can play both safety and cornerback. He's played mostly safety, but they're probably going to start him as a cornerback, they say. Hey, if the guy can play, I don't care where they put him back there. If he can break up passes and cover guys, let's do it. And, you know, he's another guy who most of the experts say is pretty good and definitely fills a need. So I like that pick. I like the first two picks a lot from the Eagles this year.
Yeah, I do too. I'm good with it. Again, they fill the need. As we know, the Pickens were a little thin in the safety, especially in the safety area. Although I thought it was interesting that the Giants turned around and traded up to get Collins when everybody else passed on him. So I thought that was interesting, but I like this kid. I think he's going to be okay. And, you know, I guess my real question is, you know, for Groh, is he a starter on opening day? If he's a corner, what does that do with Thurman? If he's a corner, where does that leave the Eagles at safety? So, again, being a starting free safety as a rookie is certainly a daunting task as well. So it will be interesting to see how this works out. But overall, I think they made a good pick and, again, certainly filled a need.
Now, of course, they have Malcolm Jenkins still at safety. And Earl Wolfe, you know, maybe this will be the year he blossoms. It's his third year. Maybe he'll be ready to step up and finally, you know, show us what he's got. Because they were pretty high on him when they drafted Earl Wolfe 2 years ago. So we shall see. The big question for me, Bill, is why did they not draft an offensive lineman? I was shocked that that didn't happen.
Well, me too. And you know, this is where I got a little bit confused in the draft. When it was with their third pick, and you know, Jordan Hicks is supposed to be a really good player, a coach on the field with a ton of potential, but you know, as they went in the first two rounds and took needs, you know, filled needs, they went with a linebacker who's not going to play probably unless he's going to be the third inside linebacker, which then makes Michael Kendricks definitely out of here, which we can get to that in a little bit. But I got a little confused with where they went there and not taking an offensive lineman that certainly they needed. And I guess if there's anything with offensive linemen, though, Chad, I guess you can find late-round picks and free agent picks that can become solid offensive linemen where you can't necessarily find that in other places. Other positions, but to not pick any offensive lineman is shocking to me for the second straight year.
Yeah, they went with five defensive guys after Aguilar. So, I mean, clearly the defense was an area of concern, and I'm glad to see them taking steps to work on that. But yeah, Hicks was a bit of a surprise for me as well. From what I'm told from Mark and some other people, they were targeting an offensive lineman in the fourth round. And then four of the guys that they had their eye on went just ahead of them in like the five or six picks before they were set to draft. So they ended up trading that fourth round pick and got a third round for next year. So I believe that that is plausible, and that's probably why it didn't happen. But they did sign for undrafted free agents who play the offensive line. And, you know, maybe they'll get lucky with one of those guys. Who knows?
Yeah, and, you know, as I said, you can definitely be successful with free agent offensive linemen, but I don't think you can make a habit of it. You know, who's at Matt Tobin, I believe, is an undrafted free agent. And you just can't have a whole bunch of those guys, but they can fill spots, and some of them can be good players. Definitely not a habit to get into. And now, you know, one of the biggest things I think that they've really got to figure out is this Evan Mathis situation. You know, he is under contract, so he's obligated to play here. But, you know, as well as anybody, you know, you have to have happy employees. And if Mathis is not happy, he's not reporting, you know, that's a huge, huge hole for them with Herriman's gone. Now you have to replace two guys, and you don't have anybody to do it with. And that's the troubling thing for me right now with the ball club.
Yeah, apparently he wants his contract renegotiated, but I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, he's not a young guy anymore. He's, what, 33, 34 at this point? And he's making $5.5 million, so I don't think he's going to get a renegotiation. I think he's eventually going to suck it up, and, you know, when it's a mandatory thing for him to be there, I think he'll, you know, hide his head a little bit and come on into camp and just suck it up and play, because he's not going to hold out, I don't think. And according to Chip, anyway, they've had him out there available to trade, but nobody's made them any offers. So I think Mathis will be back, and he'll be back in the starting lineup come September.
Well, I'm not going to believe anything Chip says. Okay, so let's go there without picking on Chip, because I'm not going to pick on Chip today because everybody thinks I pick on him. But, you know, he's no different than any other head coach. If his lips are moving in public, he's probably lying. You know, the fact that he's saying that all the other reporters are making up stories that they didn't really go after Mariota, you know, I find that very hard to believe. You know, so there's probably deals in the works. There's all kinds of things going on. And I mean, that's his job. I don't blame him for not telling the general public. But again, you know, the general public can't be fooled into thinking that everything or most anything that he says is true, because that's coach speak. That's the way it's done. So I'm not buying into that part of it at all. And the other thing along with the offensive line too is, you know, Jason Peters is going to have to be addressed here, you know, maybe next year. I mean, you could be to the point that you've got three linemen that you've got to address. And I think we talked about this way back at, I guess it was near the end of last season or maybe in the middle of the season, when we talked about the window being small. You know, it looked like we were young, the Eagles were young, but that offensive line wasn't young. And this window is not as big as people want to think it is. And now with all the new parts and pieces going into it, that are going to take a little time to meld together, you know, things are going to have to happen pretty quickly here.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I hear you, Bill. That offensive line is a concern for me. Now, if they all stay healthy, if Mathis does show up and plays hard, I think they'll be okay for this year. But, yeah, looking down the road, these guys aren't getting any younger. I mean, Peters and Mathis aren't going to be around forever. Even Kelsey, you know, he's what, 6 years into the league now? Offensive linemen don't always have a real long shelf life, so I'm sure that they're going to address that next year in the draft for sure, because they didn't get to it this year, but I think next year that's got to be something that they're going to take care of. Hopefully the tight ends will, you know, be a big help too. Zach Ertz has supposedly been working on his blocking, and of course Brent Celek is still around. My big concern about the entire offense, though, is just so many new faces, and will they be able to play together? You know, it's not like baseball where it's more of an individual thing, or even basketball where there's, you know, fewer people involved. In football, you got to have everything working together, from the offensive line to the quarterback to the running backs, the receivers. And to put all these guys together who have never played together before, at least the majority of them, that's a tough task, and that's why a lot of people say you're not going to win anything through free agency. So this is going to be a real challenge for the Birds, getting all these guys on the same page and knowing, you know, each other's tendencies. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for Chip Kelly this year.
Well, I agree, and one of the things that I wanted to ask your opinion on is it was exactly along these lines. You know, the Eagles' offense, you know, and as we know, they've won 20 games in the last 2 years and have been ranked in the top three in offensive statistics. I guess I'd like to know what your thought is on why blow up the offense. I mean, I can understand blowing up the defense because they've struggled, but they blew up the offense and got rid of, you know, they got rid of a lot of money. And got rid of some personalities that may or may not have been a problem. Why go this direction to rebuild this club or reload, whatever direction you want to go? Because I'm sure in Chip's mind, he's not thinking he's reloading. He's not rebuilding. He's expecting to win now.
That was a big question for me too. I mean, the defense needed work, and they did address it. But I was surprised there were so many changes on offense as well. I mean, I was blown away by each of those trades—the McCoy deal, the Nick Foles for Sam Bradford deal—and we all thought Jeremy Maclin was going to be back too. They just couldn't agree on the money. So, a lot of key guys are gone, and now we have to realize that, hey, Sam Bradford is the guy, assuming he's healthy, of course, come Labor Day. And then, is he going to have had enough time to work with these receivers that he's never played with before? And DeMarco Murray, joining the backfield as their lead running back. It's a lot to ask for an offense, like I said. So that's a real challenge for Chip and company.
Yeah. And with in Bradford's situation, he's, they're hoping he's going to be available for camp, which means all that summer work that takes place between quarterback and receivers and everything else is not going to happen either. So to your point, how do you get up to speed that quick? Unless the intent is that Mark Sanchez is the guy to start the season. And that could be too. They paid Sanchez a whole lot of money to keep him around, and that was before the Bradford trade. Maybe Sanchez was going to be the guy even if Foles was here. So that's just something else to think about.
And I just lost my train of thought. But I was a Foles guy, and I was really hoping he would have stayed here and they went that route, but he was not one of Chip's guys, I guess. Sanchez is what I was going to say. According to, the interview with Sanchez the other day, he thinks that, at least in his mind, that he's going to be given a shot to compete for the starting job with Bradford, even if Bradford is 100% healthy. So, and that's the right attitude to have. You want to think that you can go out there and win the job. So, we'll see what happens. I can't imagine, though, unless that he was not healthy, Bradford, that Sanchez would get the job when you're paying Bradford, what, $12 or $13 million?
Right. Well, let me ask you one more thing about Bradford and get your opinion on this. He's on a one-year contract, just under $13 million. So are you ready to hook the wagon to this guy now and extend him out 3 to 5 to 6 years and pay him, I don't know, pick a number, $75 million? Or do you let him play through the year? If he busts out, you're out $13 million and he goes away at the end of the year. Or you wait until he's successful, maybe they go to the playoffs, he's good, then maybe that price goes up another $10 million. And you have to add another year. I mean, I guess the big question is he the quarterback of the future for the next 5 or 6 or 7 years in Philadelphia?
I am not going to commit a long-term deal. I'm not going to give him that extension until I see him play at least half a season. So if I were, or who's ever, calling the shots financially, I would not extend that contract until October or November, because I want to see that this guy can play again and that he can stay healthy for, 7 or 8 games before I invest any more money in him. So that would be my stance. I don't know if Chip and company are going to agree, but that's the way I'd do it.
Well, it's interesting, as far as working in any workplace, keeping employees happy is a monumental task. And I think the Bradford situation, to me, sits just like the Jeremy Maclin situation did. The Eagles signed him to a one-year deal. It was a wait and see. Maclin had a big year. For whatever reason, they didn't come to terms during the season. Maybe they didn't try. I don't know that. But then when it came time to hit the open market, whether the not getting any love or, you didn't respect me or, whatever term they use these days, they ended up losing the guy. And they lost him maybe to the higher bidder, but it seems to me that if they would have gotten that deal done in the first half of the season maybe, then that's behind you and you don't have to worry about that. So you know, they stand to be in the exact same position here with Bradford as well.
Yeah, but I'd still be willing to take that gamble because he's just had too many injuries, and he's got to, you know, show me that he can stay healthy and can lead this team to a bunch of wins before I'm going to extend him.
All right. Well, let's slide over to the defense. You know, they didn't pick in the fourth round. They did trade up on that, so I guess we could call that kind of successful. They used their two fifth-round picks to move up five spots to pick their second-round defensive back. But then they went with two defensive backs in the sixth round again, two corners. What's your thought on that?
Well, boy, they're certainly trying their best to beef up that secondary. And I've heard a lot of people say that the first of those two sixth-round picks, Ja'Cory Shepherd, could be a real steal. I haven't seen the guy play much. Certainly, I'm not a big college football guru. But the guys that I listen to, they say that this guy could be a real steal. So, you know, hopefully he'll be a quick developer and, you know, maybe he'll play a little bit this year. And then by his second year, will be a real stalwart back in the secondary. Ja'Cory Shepherd out of Kansas. Don't know much about Randall Evans out of Kansas State, but, yeah, there's another cornerback right there. So you got to hope that with these two guys and Rowe that they get lucky on, you know, two out of the three at least, and that they have a good secondary for years to come.
Well, I'm going to go the other way on this. I don't know these guys either. I probably watched games that they played in and didn't know they were there. So I'm not going to judge on them personally in any way. But I guess the thing that I look at is if you're hanging your hat on a sixth-round cornerback, that's probably not that good. You know, the chances
right.
of these guys being NFL players or NFL starters is probably pretty thin. Now, that's again, that's not to say it can't happen, but I think to get a whole lot out of these guys is probably not going to happen. Maybe
no,
they could be special teams help or something like that, but
right.
I'm not hanging my hat on either one of these guys, maybe even making the club.
So I'm hoping that, you know, what I heard from, I think it was Mark Eckel and another guy, that Ja'Cory Shepherd could be a real steal. You know, hopefully he will be a pretty good one. I did see some highlights of him. The guy looks like he can play. It looks like he can defend. So we shall see. How about that seventh-round pick, by the way? Brian Mahalik. You see the size on this guy, a defensive end, 6'9", 302. I don't know if he can play, but, hey, Bo Allen played a little bit. He was a low-round pick last year. Maybe this guy will surprise you, too. Who knows?
Yeah, and again, I don't expect a whole lot from seventh-rounders, but what the heck. At that point, you know, you certainly didn't hurt yourself any. So why not give the guy a shot? So I'm okay with that as well. But I think when you look, with that all said, you got Aguilar, Rowe, Hicks, Shepherd, Evans, and Mahalik. You know, I think there's probably two guys on this list that are going to help the team this year. And that's assuming that Rowe can step in and win the starting job and be good at it.
Oh, and by the way, did you hear the news today that Rowe, Randall Evans, and Brian Mahalik have all signed contracts already? So they have four-year deals for three of their six draft picks already. So a little breaking news, three Eagles are in the nest.
Very nice. Well, hey, how about, I believe, unless something's happened in the last day or so, the Eagles have 13 linebackers under contract. 13. You know, and Jordan Hicks being one of those guys. So I guess you want to say on the roster, maybe not under contract, but on the roster. The last I knew, they only usually use four and sometimes three. There's going to be a lot of guys getting cut. And I guess at the top of that list is Michael Kendricks. He's going to go somewhere, and maybe they can get the draft pick or something for him. I'm very surprised that Michael Kendricks made it through draft weekend.
Can anybody explain to me why they're apparently looking to get rid of him? I mean, the guy has looked really good, I thought, the last two seasons. Last year he did miss four games with injuries, and you know, Chip noted that when he mentioned Kendricks the other day. Meanwhile, D'Amico Ryans missed most of the season last year with injuries. I just don't understand why Kendricks seems to be falling out of favor with Chip. I think the guy can play and should definitely be one of the core guys as interior or inside linebacker. So I haven't heard the good explanation as to why they might get rid of him.
Yeah, I don't know either. And as you know, I like Michael Kendricks a lot. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is you know, if Jordan Hicks, if they're expecting Jordan Hicks to be able to step in and ultimately be the replacement for D'Amico Ryans, you know, we still have Alonzo that's nicked up, too. So, you know, you've got those two guys in the middle, and that's what scares me a little bit with this defense is the linebackers, and you know I'm not on board with Brandon Graham. There's just a lot of question marks here, and if you move Michael Kendricks to another team, that just worries me even more. I would be happy to see Michael Kendricks move to the outside and take that Graham spot, and then have Kendricks and Barwin on the outside, and then have Ryans and Alonzo on the inside. I might like that a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot that Bill Davis can do back there. I mean, he's certainly got a lot of depth, if, you know, nothing else. Even with Casey Matthews gone. Yeah, there's a lot of depth now at linebacker. Hopefully Ryans will come back healthy. And I want to see Kendricks stick around. I really do, because I think that'll be really good for the defense if he's back and Ryans is back and maybe, you know, some of these new guys can play. And, you know, of course, Barwin, that's a pretty good core of linebackers.
If healthy.
That's the key to the whole entire Eagle season, if healthy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and, you know, you say that every year as you're going into a season, and that's when all your players are starting out healthy. You know, and this bunch is starting out banged up. So, you know, hopefully it's going to be okay. And you know, that gets you to the defensive backfield, and boy, oh, boy, you know, we got to be able to cover. And, you know, we got into a discussion the other day, some of us, about how, you know, when Chip came in, he inherited two corners that turned out to be awful, and Dominic Rogers, Cromartie, and Asamoah, and he got rid of them. He brought in his two guys in Fletcher and Williams. Now they've gotten rid of them. So we're in year three and we're in pair three. You know, is it scheme or is it players? And that's an important thing to play into this, because, you know, we all love Maxwell. We think he's going to be a great addition. I sure hope he is. I love the way he played in Seattle. But if he's put in a position that he can't be successful, that is a big problem if we can't cover these receivers in the NFC East.
Yep. So, hey, what is your final grade for the draft? I know it's all based on projection at this point, but I'm going to say B or B minus. What say you, Bill?
I hate to kind of even give a grade because I haven't seen these couple guys play. I'm going to have to say a C at best. And the reason I'm saying that is I think the first two guys do play, and I think they help them. The third guy is probably going to be a special teamer, and the other three guys probably aren't making the team. So I'm going to go, and if they are making the team, they're not going to be much help, at least in this first year. So I'm going to probably have to say a C at best.
Okay, I'm going to stick with B minus, I think, is my final decision. B minus.
All right. It will remain to be seen, that's for sure. All right. Well, hey, we're not sure where Elliot is. Have we been able to round him up and get him off of his busy schedule? Doesn't look like it yet. Well, let's go ahead, Chad. Let's go ahead and get our thank our sponsors. Then we'll come back to our trivia question. I think this is really an easy one if people give it just a little bit of thought. All right. But let's thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network, and the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. by logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website. You become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And, Chad, I did want to tell you, speaking of our sponsor, I was actually able to help make a purchase for a baseball team that actually a high school baseball team that bought a pitching machine and some other things. And by the time it was all said and done, they ended up with $120 of cash back in their deal, which allowed them to buy more things basically for free.
Nice.
So it was a nice little turnout and everybody benefited and they came up with extra stuff and the Kisses for Kyle Foundation benefited as well. So pretty cool. Pretty cool way to do it. The system actually does work.
That is awesome.
Yes, sir. All right. I think I'm not sure if we have Elliot or we have an answer to the trivia question, but let's see who we have. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello.
I have an answer.
You have an answer.
Mike Gagnon.
Do you need to hear the question again?
Sure, let me hear it again.
All right. In the 2007 NFL draft, the Eagles made 8 picks, and only one of them is still in the NFL, and he's still with the Birds. Can you name him?
Who is Bill Furman? No, it's Brent Celek.
The answer is Brent Celek, a fifth-round draft pick in 2007.
Damn right.
Very good. Very good. Who do we got here?
Mike Gagnon.
Hey, Mike.
Who is it?
How you doing, brother?
How are you?
Good. You? Congrats,
good.
Bob.
Well, thanks. Appreciate
it's good to
that.
See you made it back
appreciate
home to
that.
Florida.
Yeah, we sure did. And I can congratulate you as well because your man, Craig Berube, got run out of time.
I'll donate the pick to sell it for Kisses to Kyle. I don't even know who Roman Gabriel is. That's before my time, so you can give that to Kisses.
You're not an
Kyle.
Old guy like us, huh?
No, I'm way after you guys. So.
There's no pop-up for you yet.
Nope.
All right, Mike. Well, we sure appreciate it. And did you have any thoughts on the Eagles while we had you? How did you like the draft?
No. I like the first 2 picks, honestly. And after that, I completely agree with what you guys were saying before about the offensive line. I'm worried that Chip's tenure here will be remembered as a deteriorating offensive line, and he never got his QB, and it's going to be sad because if you could take Chip, put him in the Andy Reid situation where he came in and he got his QB and he has Jim Johnson's D and all that stuff, I think you have multiple Super Bowls there, two. But this guy is he's starting out in the mud, and I hope he does well, and I'm really pulling for him, but everything is just against this guy. I'm really pulling for him, but it just doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, what's your thought, Mike, on what we were just talking about as far as blowing up the offense? That is really puzzling to me that, whether it was just the personalities and the superstar kind of attitude that had to go or what.
Yeah.
But that was a pretty darn good offense. It just wasn't winning games on the defensive side in my mind.
It was, but a lot of people say, how many years did you have those players and they didn't win a playoff game? But I think, I don't know what to say as far as that, except that I completely agree what he's doing on the D. On the offense, I'm as puzzled as anybody else. He just, it's like a Rubik's Cube. this whole offseason has been like a Quentin Tarantino movie. You never know what's coming next, you know?
Right.
You just have to either believe or you don't. And it's really easy not to, because it looks so insane on the outside looking in. But it's fun to take the chance, at least for now. This could very easily blow up in all our faces, and there's probably a 60% plus chance that it does. But at least we're doing something different for a little while, and it's fun. It's a fun ride while it goes on.
I agree with you. I guess the only thing that scares me is if it blows up, I don't want it to blow up for 5 or 10 years before we can get out of it. That's
what's
going to
happen.
Really,
that's exactly
me.
What's going to happen. If this goes down bad, this is going to sit with us, and it's going to be bad for, you know, almost a permanency of 3+ years, you know, and that's really scary.
Absolutely.
Well,
Mike, we appreciate
you on the edge of your
seat.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you calling, and we appreciate your input and answering the question.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right,
thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Gotcha.
Hey,
just,
Bill.
Go ahead.
We didn't mention it, and I was maybe trying to avoid it, but I have to ask you. I know you wrote about it on Facebook today. What do you make of today's news that our former star running back, that Shady McCoy, essentially accused Chip Kelly of dumping most of the team's good black players? What's your take on that?
I did not listen to it. I haven't heard it, but I'm going to say it's crap. I think I've said this to you before. I know I've said it before in public. As being a high school coach for a long, long time, I never coached a white player. I never coached a black player. I coached football players. And that's at the high school level. And when you're in the National Football League and you've been a college coach in a league that's probably whatever the right number is now, 75% black, whatever it is, you can't survive in that business being a racist. That's ridiculous. And whatever, you know, I always liked Shady McCoy. You know, I thought he was a good player, but I always thought he talked too much. And even when, you know, all that noise about with the Giants where he was always picking fights, trying to stir them up to get things going there, a lot of the Eagle fans thought it was funny because he played for us, you know. And now he doesn't play for us, and it's not funny. And, you know, he needs to move on. But on this one, as much as some people might find it hard to believe, I got Chip's back on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know where he's getting this from. As far as last time I checked, Jason Peters is still black. D'Amico Ryans is still black. And a lot of the guys that he's brought in now, DeMarco Murray, Byron Maxwell, Nelson Aguilar, the first-round draft pick, those guys are all black too. So I don't know. I think it's just some kind of sour grapes on Shady's part because he got traded.
Yeah, and you know what? If it goes back to the Riley Cooper thing, you know, then call out Riley Cooper or call out Chip about Riley Cooper. You know, don't throw a blanket over the whole thing and say that it's something that's not. So, yeah, you know, I like I said, I haven't listened to it. I don't plan to listen to it unless I stumble across it somewhere. It's meaningless to me. It's just Shady making noise.
I'm with you.
Well, hey, I wanted to talk to you. We'll switch gears a little bit. I wanted to talk to you about the Phillies and particularly about Chase Utley. You know, it's becoming big news now, obviously, because it's getting so bad. But, you know, something's going to have to happen. It's going to have to happen pretty quick, Jet.
All right, here's the deal. Chase is clearly off to a horrible start to the season. That 103 batting average pretty much says it all. He's not in the lineup for a second straight night, and that's a good decision, I think, on Ryan Sandberg's part, allowing Utley to clear his mind and, you know, come back fresh after a couple of days off. Is Chase the player he was 5 years ago? Of course not. But is he washed up? I don't think so. But we'll perhaps have this discussion again if he's still hitting under a buck and a half at the end of May. I hope that's not the case.
Well, you know, I asked our friend Bob Petrone Jr., the stats genius. What Chase's batting average is back to last All-Star break, and I don't know if you saw this, because in my mind I was thinking somewhere around 230 for the last 100 games. And as of Monday night's 0 for 2, since May the 29th, basically almost a calendar year, 11 months, he is hitting 216. He's 105 for 486. 486 is almost the full season of at-bats. And he is hitting.
Yeah, that's not good.
Chase is under full contract. He's under full contract for this year. Anything after this year, there's three vesting option years.
Yeah, if he gets enough at-bats, that's one of them. So if he has enough at-bats this year, he'll get that vesting option.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Obviously, I had a lot of windshield time in the last couple of days, and I was thinking about this. And remember 1989 when one Michael Jack Schmidt just decided one day, you know what, I'm just not good enough anymore. I'm not playing at the level I want to play at. And he walked away. And
oh, I remember it well.
I'm not sure that come July 7th week or whatever that exact time is of the All-Star break, that Chase Utley is hitting 200, I'm not sure Chase Utley isn't walking away.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And here's why. I think he'd like to finish his career as a Philly, but not that way. And the other thing is, if he does start to hit and he gets his average up to 250 and, you know, shows that he can still play, you know, maybe then he will agree to a trade and he'll go somewhere else in July. But, boy, nobody's going to want him right now, not hitting 103 or even 180. So he's going to have to turn it around soon if anybody's even going to make an attempt to trade for him. I saw a stat the other day that he could go 10 for his next 10 and he'd still be under 200. So he's got a long road back, and May and June are going to be key months for him as far as his future.
Absolutely. And you know, you watch him, and he still plays hard. He's still playing the field hard. He's still digging into the plate. He's still hustling. And he hit some balls hard over the last week before they got to Atlanta, and the balls kept getting caught. How many balls got caught in the alley in deep – right center field against the Cardinals, and he just couldn't buy a hit. He was hitting, and he was right on the ball. But, you know, they got – I think I saw where he has 9 hits for the season and the Phils have 10 wins. That's not going to cut it, especially from your three-hole guy.
And he had 3 of those hits in one game, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. Wait, what is your thinking now with as this thing is starting to go south? What's your thoughts on the Hamels, Papelbon, Ryan Howard trade outlook at this point?
Well, I think Howard's not going anywhere. I just don't think anybody's going to take him. But I'm surprised that Papelbon is still there, to be honest. I really thought somebody would have snagged him by now. And I'll be shocked if somebody doesn't trade for Papelbon at some point between now and the end of July. Hamels is off to a rough start this season. He pitched well his second-to-last start, but got roughed up again over the weekend on Saturday. But I don't think that's a concern to anybody. He's typically off to a slow start in any season anyway, so he's not generally a good April, early May pitcher anyway. I think people know what they're going to get in Cole Hamels. He's 31. He's still in his prime. I don't think anybody would be worried about that if they were to trade for him. And I do think he's going to get traded at some point this season. I just don't know when or to whom, but I think both Hamels and Papelbon will be gone by the end of July.
I hope I disagree with you. I think Papelbon is definitely going to go. I still hope that they keep Hamels. I like Papelbon too, but I like Hamels. And I'm just thinking, if you don't have Hamels, who is ever going to watch a game? I mean, we could talk about Aaron Harang's nice start if you'd like, but I'm not thinking he's putting people in the seats very much Bank Park.
If you look at the home attendance, nobody's putting people in the seats this year, so it's not really going to matter. I mean, unless you're talking about a fireworks night or maybe a bobblehead giveaway, you're going to find a lot of seats available.
Well, speaking of that, the other night I was watching the game against the Braves, and you could have had a seat in the dugout. There was less people in Atlanta than there is at Citizens Bank Park.
Yeah, Atlanta doesn't draw all that well a lot of times, and boy, I did. I saw that. There were a lot of empty seats, and it was good to see Jeff Francoeur and Aaron Harang both doing a little damage against their former team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now we added Chad Billingsley back to the mix, and I'm not sure that's going to make a whole lot of difference. And what do you think about Darren Ruff? Are you ready to turn the keys over to him and put him out and get him, a full week or two or three's worth of at-bats?
Yes, I am indeed. He's been playing a little more lately. He's 6 for his last 15, so that's a small sample, but, you know, he's hitting .400 over his last 4 games or whatever. And he's playing mostly left field, a little bit of first base when they rest Howard, but I'm okay with getting him in the lineup. I mean, this is, I think, do-or-die decision time for Darren Ruff. Are you going to keep him around and give him some playing time, or are you just going to, you know, let him go later on this year? I think if he plays regularly, he might give you something, at least offensively. Let him play. See what happens. You know, I'm fine with having him in the lineup. They're not going to contend, so what the heck's the difference? Whether it's left field or first base, I want to see Ruff in the lineup for the next month, you know, 5 times a week. I want to see him and find out for sure if this guy can play or not. He's not getting any younger, so let's find out what Darren Ruff has to bring to the Phillies offense.
Well, I'm thinking, Odubel, Pereira, and Ben Revere are actually playing pretty well. Those guys have to be in the lineup. They're the guys that can actually hit the baseball right now. You have Dominic Brown, who's another mystery. You have Darren Ruff, who's a mystery. Where are they going to put these guys? And then you have Sizemore, Francoeur, and these guys, spot players. You know, I don't know. The only place that I could see putting these guys is right field.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sizemore and Francoeur, you don't have to see anything more from them. You know that they're just, once or twice a week guys. That's fine. But I want to see Revere. I want to see Herrera. And I want to see Ruff getting a lot of playing time. I don't think Dom Brown's ever going to blossom again. He had his 15 minutes of fame, or I guess 6 weeks in the spotlight 2 years ago when he turned that hot streak into an all-star appearance. But I just don't think the guy has the attitude, and maybe he doesn't even have the talent to be a big-time, everyday player. So the jury may be out on Brown, but I think it's close to finding out that he's just not going to be a big-time player.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay if we didn't see him again, honestly.
J.P. Crawford back today down in Clearwater. J.P. Crawford, so he's back healthy, and he'll probably, you know, go from Clearwater up to AA at some point in the near future. He's our shortstop of the future.
Yep. But what about your boy Freddie? I thought we had the batting champion and the Gold Glover there already. What are we going to do with him?
Look, Freddie is what he is. He's off to a good start. He's, you know, tailing off a little bit lately, and we expected that. But, you know, if Ullie goes, you move Galvis to second. I'm okay with keeping Galvis in the lineup. He's not going to hit for average for a full season. We know that. But the guy plays hard. He gives you good defense. Let Freddie alone, Bill.
Well, here's the answer to your question, though. Herrera is really a second baseman.
That's true.
So when Utley decides it's time, Herrera goes back to second, Revere goes back to center, or somebody else goes to center, Revere to left, but, you know, you keep them all in the lineup. And maybe Revere goes to center, and that gets rough to his at-bats you're looking for, and Herrera moves to the infield with Galvis.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out and, you know, what the lineup's going to look like in a couple of years. So hopefully they'll be back on the road to contending by 2017.
Absolutely. Well, hey, there was another pretty major sporting event over the weekend, a non-Philadelphia sporting event, though, and that was Mayweather-Pacquiao. And I wanted to ask you about the aftermath of that entire event, the money that changed hands, the undisclosed injury, improper paperwork. I mean, what do you make of all this? Did the fans get ripped off? They get duped on this deal?
hey, it's boxing. Look, I didn't pay for the fight. I don't have a spare $100 for that sort of stuff. But I did see some of the quote-unquote highlights, and it was pretty boring. But from what I understand, although he's 48-0, a lot of Mayweather's fights have been pretty dull. He's a technical fighter who doesn't really mix it up all that much. And then there's the news that you alluded to that came out a day or two later that Pacquiao had a bum shoulder for the couple of weeks leading up to the fight. So that is an issue. Were people duped? I don't know. I mean, you can't guarantee how a fight between two boxers is going to go. What if it ended with a first or second round knockout? Then you would have people complaining that they were duped in that way. It's boxing. You just don't know what you're going to get. And, I mean, there's always got to be some kind of improprieties in the boxing world, if you ask me, going back to the Don King era, you know?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm glad I don't bet. I'm glad I'm not a bettor because I believe the fans did get duped, especially when it comes to the bets. That injury supposedly happened 2.5 weeks or thereabouts before the fight. They were shooting him up daily so he could get through his workouts and all that. And then they, you know, and then they didn't get approval to shoot him up on the day of the fight because the paperwork was not filled out properly. And they, and what happened is they didn't disclose that he had been injured, but they did disclose that he had been taking these shots. And the boxing commission didn't approve the shot. So he goes into the ring and he's out there 2 or 3 rounds, and all of a sudden that injury now is a problem. And he can't throw punches. To me, if I had some money on that, if I had a dollar on it, I'd probably really be mad. But if I had some serious money on it, I would be pretty upset that I was duped and the public was duped on this deal.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from on that. And that's why I would never bet on boxing, because I just don't trust the whole sport. There's so often things going on like that in boxing.
And actually, I can tell you what, I used to like boxing back in the day and was a huge Joe Frazier fan and loved Marvelous Marvin Hagler and those guys and Hearns and Leonard and all that. But since then, you know, it's just as crooked as it could be, and it's just not going to change. And, you know, just the fact that there is whatever the total number ends up being, $250 million or something like that between the winners and the TV rights and all that went with it, my gosh, it just you could feed third world countries couple times over with the money they spent that was given to these two boxers, and then to get a bad deal coming out of it on top of it.
Yeah.
So, well, hey, I think you had some information. I guess we didn't get Elliot tonight. He either got tied. I guess he got tied up. He didn't make it. So we're through it anyway. But I believe you have some information on our guest for our next show, which is going to be 2 weeks from tonight on May the 20th.
Yes, and I'm confident that this one will turn out as expected. The NBA playoffs are going on, Bill, and on May 19th, the night before our next show, it is ping pong ball night, when the league sorts out all the ping pong balls to determine the draft order for the lottery teams, including our 10-9-8-76ers. So the next night, on the 20th, we're happy to have back with us on the big show Comcast Sportsnet and CSNPhilly.com Sixers insider D. Lynam.
Fantastic. Well, we had a great time when D was with us the last time. And, you know, it will be interesting to see her take first on the ping pong ball situation, but just on what she saw over the course of the season. And I really want to hear her take on two things. One, the Michael Carter-Williams trade, and two, your boy, Nerlens Noel, and how she felt like he improved. And I, off the top of my head, I want to say she may have come up with like 10.8 rebounds as her prediction, if I'm guessing. But
yeah, and she was pretty darn close.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm kind of interested to see what she thinks on that, and if she thinks that it's really time to win and that they're going to be all in with this draft and returning the corner back in the right direction.
We have so many questions, or at least I do, for her. You know, can Embiid and Noel play together? Is Robert Covington a keeper? Of course, we'll know where the Sixers will be drafting, and we'll find out, you know, does she think they should go for the point guard or whoever it is, depending on where they are in that first five. They're either going to be first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, I believe. So we'll get her take on who the Sixers should target in the June draft.
Absolutely. Chet, on a different note, you know, our friends at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown celebrating their 20th anniversary. And, you know, we mentioned this last week, but want to mention it again because it's coming up. Flyers and NHL Hall of Famer Bill Barber will be in the store on May the 16th. And your favorite player, the Rifle, Reggie Leach, will be there June the 13th. Carl's does a great job getting his guests in. We hope everyone can support his efforts. He has a Facebook page, website, and so forth. And again, we appreciate him donating the Roman Gabriel picture. And last week's Chuck Bednar, Paul Hornung picture was a great giveaway, and we got a lot of great feedback from that as well. We appreciate everything Carl does for us.
Absolutely, well, I do hope to get there to see the Rifle.
Yeah, I
parting
told
shot.
Carl you were going to try to get up there. But how about a parting shot for the week? You have one?
I do indeed. Now, here's the deal. This Friday, a guy who, through no fault of his own, will forever have an unusual spot in Philadelphia sports history, will be laid to rest. He earned that place in the city's history on December 15th, 1968, when, as a 19-year-old kid, he attended the Eagles' season finale at Franklin Field, dressed in a Santa Claus suit, and was asked to fill in during the team's halftime holiday show because the guy who was supposed to do it got stuck in traffic and didn't get there on time. Well, the Eagles stunk that year. They started the season 0-11 before winning the next two games, costing them the chance to get the number one pick and take O.J. Simpson. So, come the season finale, the fans were not happy to see a fill-in Santa Claus out there waving to them, and they pelted him with snowballs, something, of course, that's referenced still today, 46 and a half years later. And in fact, it was the inspiration for the book A Snowball's Chance, co-written by our pal Matt Goldberg. Anyway, that gentleman's name was Frank Olivo of Glen Olden, and he passed away last Thursday at the age of 66 after a battle with heart disease and other issues. By all accounts, he was a pretty darn good guy who didn't deserve that spot in sports infamy. So rest in peace, Frank Olivo.
Very good. Well, I can't say I can top that one, because so I am going to let that go, and we will close out the parting shots with that. And that, you know, it's funny how things happen, you know, and somebody mentioned that whole event again just the other day, and, you know, it will be, as long as there's a Philadelphia sports, there's going to be that story, and as you say, rest in peace, Frank.
Yep.
All right, so, hey, let's thank Carl's Cards and Collectibles again for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesto, this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, May the 20th. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. You can also like our Blog Talk Radio page and get all of our updates as well. And don't forget, we will be having D. Lineham on that May 20th show, so we're looking forward to that. All right, high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.